Welcome to Immigration Review, your weekly source for immigration case law updates and insights. I'm your host, Kevin A. Gregg, back again to review the week's precedential immigration cases, rummaging through the decisions so you don't have to. This podcast is sponsored by Kurzban, Kurzban, Tetzeli & Pratt, also known as KKTP, a law firm where I'm also a partner. Whether you are facing an immigration obstacle, a serious injury, or a legal issue in your business, KKTP will aggressively protect your best interests. This podcast is also sponsored by DocketWise, an all-in-one immigration forms and case management solution trusted by thousands of immigration lawyers across the U.S. I really like DocketWise. It makes immigration applications easy by allowing the clients to provide information through simple online questionnaires that are shareable by text or email and available in multiple languages. Not only that, DocketWise provides a comprehensive group of case management features, including invoicing and calendaring, secure messaging, task management, and a lot more. You can learn all about DocketWise and receive a 10% discount on your subscription by heading to docketwise.com/immigration-review, so they know we sent you. And as always, this show does not constitute legal advice and has no bias other than to keep you up to date and to enable you, my dear colleagues, to excel in court. So, without further ado, let's start the review. On February 14th, I had the pleasure of speaking with Andy Posner, the founder and CEO of Capital Good Fund. As you've undoubtedly heard on the podcast before, Capital Good Fund is a nonprofit, and it's a U.S. Treasury-certified community development financial institution that offers personal loans ranging in size from $300 to $25,000 to help their clients cover a variety of key needs, including, as you'll hear, nearly all immigration-related needs. And that includes your attorney's fees, loyal listeners. As Andy tells it, Capital Good Fund is taking on the $200 billion predatory lending industry and trying to put poverty out of business. Since it was founded, Capital Good Fund has financed almost $30 million worth of loans to over 10,000 families in the 10 states it operates in, with more states soon to come. Andy is an accomplished financier, entrepreneur, and poet, and it was a pleasure speaking with him. I hope you enjoy our conversation as well. I'm here with Andy Posner, founder and CEO of Capital Good Fund. It is February 14th, 2023. How are you doing, Andy?
Good. Happy Valentine's Day. Pleasure to be on the podcast.
You got it to me before I was going to get it to you. I knew I should have started with Happy Valentine's Day. I should have known as an attorney, never give the other side an opportunity to say something that you want to do. And when you want to control the narrative, that's on me. Happy Valentine's Day to you as well.
Thank you.
Listeners should know that you and I just met 5 minutes ago. We've, of course, been corresponding over email, but it is a bit fast to be wishing one another a happy Valentine's Day. But this is also a loving podcast.
Indeed.
Where are you located, Andy?
Well, it's interesting. Capital Good Fund is headquartered in Providence, Rhode Island. I was a graduate student at Brown University when I started the organization and lived there from 2007 to 2021. And then the pandemic made me realize that I didn't need to be local. Capital Good Fund is now a national organization. And my wife and I are both from the LA area. We have a young son and our parents are here. So we decided to move back in fall of 2021. And so now I live in Los Angeles.
Can't hate on that. I myself have been in the Northeast, went to school in Boston, and now I live in San Diego. So I certainly understand why you'd want to be on the best coast.
A similar migration, yes.
It's been pretty wet here though, right? It's kind of weird. I don't know what to do with all this.
Well, we definitely needed the rain, but there was quite a cold snap in New England. So I was my staff were jealous of the weather I've been experiencing.
Yeah, you can't. You don't even bring it up to people from the Northeast. I'm actually from Florida, so when I did my time in the Northeast, that's what I call it. I did my time in New England.
Exactly.
I don't talk to people. I don't complain really about anything. It's just mean. So thanks for being on the podcast. We're here to, of course, talk about Capital Good Fund, which I've really been looking forward to this interview because the more and more I read about Capital Good Fund, the more I see what you guys are doing. I think it's just so important to the immigration community and to immigration attorneys. I just think it's really cool. Really, anything that is thinking outside the box on issues of law and finance is always going to pique my interest. So what is Capital Good Fund?
Yeah. And we're speaking at an auspicious time because I incorporated the organization on February 10, 2009. So we just celebrated our 14th birthday as an organization. And we're pretty unique. We are both a 501c3 nonprofit and a U.S. Treasury Certified Community Development Financial Institution, or CDFI. We're not a bank or credit union. We don't take deposits. The CDFI designation is both a good housekeeping seal of approval, an additional mandate for us to serve certain communities. So to maintain the certification, 60% of our lending has to go to what's called our target market, which in our case is folks that are low income, Black, Latino, or Native American. And as a CDFI, we also get access to funding from the Treasury, and it becomes easier to raise grant and debt capital from financial institutions or other groups. So we are a nonprofit lender based in Rhode Island, like I said, and we now operate in 10 states across the country with more coming down the pike. And we lend across three what we call verticals. The one that we'll focus on here is our immigration loan program. But in addition to that, we also do residential solar and energy efficiency financing for low-income homeowners, as well as small dollar personal loans. This is loans under $1,500 for things like rent, utilities, car repair, that kind of thing. And just to give a sense of scale, we've done $29 million in loans to 11,000 families with a 96.5% repayment rate over the last 14 years. And we're growing quite significantly. Last year, we did $9 million in loans. We're expecting to do $16 million this year. So it's a very exciting time for us to be chatting.
Wow. A lot going on there. First of all, congratulations on 14 years. That's 14 years of doing anything is very impressive to keep it going, especially in finance, I imagine. And so just to be clear, we're talking about loans to individuals who usually won't qualify for traditional loans. Is that about right?
That's correct. Our borrowers, for various reasons, are not able to access financing from more mainstream sources, whether that's a bank loan, home equity line of credit, maybe even a credit card. That could be because they're undocumented, they don't have home equity, they have no or poor credit, they're low income, or they simply distrust the mainstream financial system. The average FICO score of our borrowers is about 590, so very subprime. 90% of our clients are low income, and about 75% are people of color, about 40% Black, 28% Latino, and then some other groups as well.
And I must admit, when I start talking about credit and finances and stuff, I actually myself get a bit nervous. There's such a bad rap on credit, and it gets so many people in trouble. But the more I learn about it personally, the more I realize how important it is. But I think it's a legitimate question. I think it's a question many people would have. Why do non-citizens, maybe people here without any authorization, why do they need credit? Why should they even be talking about debt and credit? Why is this a good service?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting how I even came across the issue of a need for immigration loans. I'm fluent in Spanish. And when I was working in 2008, 2009 on the idea for what became Capital Good Fund, I did a lot of focus groups in the Providence community. There's a large Hispanic community there. And I was just trying to understand what is their need when it comes to the financial system, access to credit, banking services, and the like. And something that kept coming up was them or people they know having need for access to loans for green cards, citizenship, asylum petitions, family petitions, that kind of thing. And I had never heard of that need. I will note my mom is actually an immigrant from Ukraine in the 70s, but I think back then it was not very expensive. So I never thought about the need for that. So then when I started asking them, well, what do you do for access to finance? Growing up middle class, I sort of assumed that they would just get a bank loan. And they said, no bank's going to lend to us for the reasons I outlined. And there were all sorts of predatory loans that they told me about, you know, people on the street corner that would take your green card or documentation as collateral, that would hound you, that would charge astronomical interest rates. So that blew my mind. But then I decided to learn more about predatory lending writ large, and even legalized predatory lending is a stunning problem. Because there are a lot of people that we serve who are here legally, you know, they have a green card and they want to get a, become a citizen or what have you, who could access mainstream financial services, but can't. And so they turn to things like a payday loan, which in Rhode Island has a 261% interest rate.
I don't know. What? What is it, just on the math? If it's a $100 loan at 261%, what does that loan become?
Well, I think if you borrow, say, $300, you're going to pay back probably $800.
Oh, my.
So it's, you know, it's a huge drain on a family's finances, not to mention that an immigration case can easily cost up to $20,000. So when you ask about, you know, why is this service needed? It's because families have needs for credit. I mean, if you think about, like, the American system is predicated on people having access to capital to start a business, to go to school, to buy a house, to buy a car. It is the lubricant of the economic system.
Right.
And bringing that access to immigrant communities is absolutely essential for opportunity, for upward mobility, for stability, and the like.
With your immigration program, to dumb it down, an application fee for maybe adjustment of status, you know, could run $1,500, $1,600, $1,700 with the biometrics and all the other fees, maybe even more, actually up to $2,200. Attorney's fees, like you said, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000. You guys give a loan to non-citizens for all of those things? For qualified non-citizens.
Correct. So our product, let's just describe the product, which we call the Unity Loan. It ranges from $300 to $20,000. And it covers any type of immigration case and all of the costs associated with that case. Biometrics, travel, USCIS filing fees, attorney's fees, paperwork, medical, you know, anything that needs to be done to affect that case. We've even done, you know, travel, bringing people from Africa to fly here, that sort of thing. And the interest rate on the loans, it depends on the loan amount and the state, but broadly speaking, it's 5 to 15.99%. We need to charge an interest rate, even though we're nonprofit, that allows us to sustain our operations, because we do borrow the money that we lend out, and we have to cover losses, our borrowing costs, and then, you know, sustain our operations. That is still, of course, orders of magnitude lower. It's an unsecured loan. There's no collateral, no prepayment penalty. There are no fees of any kind. Application, closing, late, nothing. And we report to the credit bureaus. So our borrowers will build their credit score as they're making the loan payments. And it's a four-year term. And then crucially for the attorney, we fund them directly up front. So it gets the attorney out of the business of being a lender, basically. And you don't have to put people on payments plans, and you can just focus on the legal work.
Wow. Okay. Wow. That's very interesting. We do payment plans. I'm sure many of the attorney listeners do payment plans. So essentially, the immigration attorneys get paid. The non-citizen gets 4 years tops to pay back their loan, and they don't have to put up any collateral. And you charge less of an interest rate than other borrowers if they can even get a loan. How does your interest rate compare to other lenders?
Yeah, I mean, the comparison point can vary depending on the state and the amount that the person is looking to borrow. I mean, there are companies like One Main Financial that might do a $5,000 loan at 50%. And the difference between 50% and 15.99% on a $5,000 loan is thousands of dollars of interest, not to mention the other fees that they add on, their predatory servicing practices, confusing contracts, all of those things. So we're easily saving families thousands of dollars on average when it comes to an immigration loan.
It's very interesting. I don't know if you know about the various parole programs being put into place by the Biden administration or even the asylum program that are requiring sponsors in the United States. Perhaps sponsors don't have enough money. Is that something that you have looked into, loaning to sponsors so individuals can be brought to the United States? Like you mentioned, sometimes you do loans for flights as well. Is that something that you've looked into, or that would be possible?
It would definitely be possible. I think the key for us is to be working with an AILA member attorney that we have a relationship with, that we vetted. So, because key for us is we want to protect the customer, the family, make sure they're successful. But yes, we would absolutely do that. We've even done loans for ICE bond, detention bonds. We've not done a lot. It's for whatever reason, but I would love to do more of those if it's practical.
That's actually very interesting. So you do loans for ICE bonds without collateral?
Correct. Yes. It's like any other loan that we do. The challenge with that product, and we've only done a handful of them, we did 200 immigration loans for over $1 million last year. Maybe one or two of those were for bond, not for lack of wanting to, but I think the challenge is that the loan has to go to a person that can post bond on behalf of the person detained. Obviously, the person in detention can't take out the loan while they're detained. So maybe the logistics of that has been difficult, but I'm very interested to see how we can do more of that.
I'm not going to lie. If nothing else, I hope this interview does result in more of that. I wouldn't be surprised if many listeners don't know about that. That is always the challenge. There are many lenders will not give a bond loan. They don't think that the non-citizen will appear if they're let out and they'll be on the hook for the bond. And when they do, they require like 25% collateral. I hope that you get a lot of attorneys directing you towards their clients' families to post detention bond after this interview. Now, I don't think there's as much detention as there was under the prior administration, but there's certainly a lot of detention, and a zero collateral detention bond is a very vital thing.
Yeah, I definitely would encourage listeners to reach out if they're interested in seeing how we can do more of that. I mean, there was a company called Libre by Nexus, which had one of the most predatory models I've ever seen. They would do these bonds, but they would charge an astronomical fee for renting like an ankle monitor on top of other fees, and they would threaten people. I think they got sued out of existence finally, and I don't know what families are doing now when it comes to bond, but yeah, that was a particular passion of mine. I would love to figure out how to do more.
That's fantastic, because the whole detention system is not, it's not designed to keep people detained who don't need to be detained. If an immigration judge has determined that a person is not a danger to the community and that a certain amount of money will guarantee their appearance at a future hearing, there's no reason that that person should be detained. Then you're just keeping someone detained because they can't come up with the money. And that's not what detention is for. That turns the whole system on its head.
Exactly.
What are the states that you can loan in?
Yeah. The challenge here is that because we're not a depository, a bank or credit union, we are subject to state-by-state regulations. I'll list out the states we're in as of this recording, Valentine's Day, 2023.
Happy Valentine's Day. States.
Thank you. Yes. You won that time.
All right. That's right. There you go.
So we're based in Rhode Island, and then we also offer immigration loans in Massachusetts, Florida, Illinois, Texas, Colorado, Georgia, New Jersey, Connecticut, and if I didn't already say it, Delaware. That should be 10 states. And then we are also going to be applying for lending license soon in DC, Maryland, Virginia, and Pennsylvania. And hoping to add North Carolina as well here in the next couple of months. And I should note that the borrower, whoever takes out the loan, has to reside in one of those states. The end beneficiary doesn't have to. So for example, with the detention bond, it doesn't matter where the person is detained, just that the friend or family member who takes out the loan is in one of those states in which we are able to lend.
Right. That was my next question. And that's a good and a bad thing. On the one hand, so many individuals are detained in Texas, so it would be nice if that would then qualify them, but it's the borrower, their family member usually, who has to be somewhere else. But again, I do have a predisposition to gravitate towards detention. Detention is a small portion of what you're doing. It's any immigration loan.
That's
and so
correct.
The attorney can be anywhere. It's where the borrower is located. It doesn't even matter where the client is. It's just the borrower.
Exactly. It's a question of the residence of the borrower. Exactly.
Detention aside, just general immigration loans. I think the number one thing that a lot of traditional lenders would think is that it's a bit risky of a proposition. It's a non-citizen. They could just go to another country. And you don't know what's going to happen in immigration court or before the agencies. There seem to be so many variables. And I was looking at your materials. You don't even require that the borrower have a social security number. How are you ensuring repayment? How are you making this work?
Yeah, our cumulative repayment rate is 96% on our immigration loan portfolio, and that's over 14 years. So we have really good data. showing that this works. I think it's a function of our customer service staff or loan officers speak the language, look like the customer base, understand where they're coming from. So we're not just Capital One or Chase or what have you. We're an entity that we have that the people trust and want to maintain a relationship with. The other thing is that we have a different way of underwriting the loans. It does take us a little bit longer. It's not a pure algorithm. Most lenders just want to pull your FICO and make a decision based on that. We look more at the underlying credit data. So your history of usage. Now, a lot of our clients have no credit data. So then if that's the case, we turn to other forms of data, including usage of a bank or prepaid card account. And that's really important for us because our default payment mechanism is an ACH withdrawal, so an automatic debit from the account. So what we find is if people tend to have money in their account, you know, they have recurring transactions, they don't have a lot of overdrafts, that's indicative to us of a person who can manage his or her cash flow. And then when we go to pull the payment will go through. But the other thing is that we're very flexible. So our servicing team, if you call us, we will work with you. You know, when the pandemic hit, we reached out to all of our borrowers, we offered deferments and restructures. If you call us up and say, I need to change the date of my payment, those are all things that we do. The flexibility is a key part. It's not just that we, you know, you submit an application, we run your credit, we approve or deny, and then that's it. You know, it's a long-term relationship throughout the life of the loan. And I think that's just really key to our success. And then the fact that we partner with attorneys who are high quality. I think it was late in 2021, maybe early 2020, we became the national preferred loan partner to Ayla National, which was really important for us because this program only works if we have attorneys that refer to us. So what the Ayla partnership did was to kind of give their imprimatur that this is legitimate, that this is ethical, you can do it, it's beneficial to you. And now it's allowed us to expand our network of high quality attorneys. So we know that when we get a referral, we're not just getting attorneys sending us some random person who has no chance of winning their case. I know attorneys can't guarantee that, of course, and we don't ask them to, but they're not just sending us anybody. These are ethical attorneys that we have relationships with. So I think it's all those factors combined that have led to our success.
That's awesome. It seems just looking at the materials that, and like you said, you're willing to work with borrowers in many circumstances and work around their situation to borrow. I guess I'm curious, what are the circumstances that you wouldn't provide a loan to? I mean, It seems to me like you're saying that if you as an attorney or the client need a loan, at least reach out to you. But I mean, what are the circumstances where you just wouldn't loan?
Yeah, our approval rate is 60%. So obviously, you know, no one wins if we make a loan that somebody can't pay back. And the most common reasons that we can't approve a loan are because they don't pass an ability to pay test, meaning we don't believe based on the income that we can verify and their expenses that the loan payment fits within the budget. And the second most common reason would be if they have a bank account that is frequently overdrawn or doesn't have a lot of usage, because again, that automatic debit is really key to our strategy. If we have people that are always the payments failing, now we have to call them and it becomes a back and forth, and we're servicing over 3,000 customers right now, and that's growing. So those are the most common reasons. And then the other one is like, you know, while we don't base the underwriting on the credit score, if you do have a credit history and you just default on every single thing you've ever taken out, there's no indication of attempt to settle debts or make any on-time payments, then you could have $1 million in your account. You could be, you know, you could be Donald Trump and in theory have enough money to service debt and just go into bankruptcy. So, you know, that's another thing we see. But 60% is a pretty high approval rate for a product of this nature.
If I was giving you financial advice, it would be not to lend to Donald Trump. I think that's a bad bet. That's just my unsolicited advice.
I appreciate that. You know, he fortunately, he has not approached Capital Good Fund for a loan, but I would have quite happily issued a denial in that circumstance.
Oh, wow. All right. I'll have his people reach out to your people. Happy to play middleman. What if the non-citizen borrower doesn't have work authorization in the United States?
I mean, our underwriting team has some requirement. There are some cases in which we do require a co-applicant who does or who is not at risk of deportation. Aside from that, whatever income we verify, whether it's under the table, we don't care about that. We just need to be able to have some confidence that that income is there just so that we can make sure that they pass the ability to pay test.
So if there's like a letter from their employer or some other way for you to verify that this individual who may be working without authorization still has the money, that then they could potentially be a borrower.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a nanny and you're paid by a family and that family wants to write a letter and we can match it with deposits in the bank account. I mean, that's the other thing, is like we see bank statements. So it's very easy for us to confirm, okay, they say they make $1,000. I see $1,000 deposited in the account, for example, then we absolutely can work with that. And all the data that we collect, we hold confidential. You know, I would under no circumstance share that data unless, I suppose if we were subpoenaed, I would still fight it unless there was some valid reason. So we're not asking whether they're getting paid under the table because we care. It's just because we want to make sure they can afford the loan.
Of course. You know, the thing I keep coming back to as the immigration attorney, right? I wear many hats. The immigration attorney hat is thinking, wow, the attorney gets paid up front and doesn't have to worry anymore about getting paid for their services. That's between you and the non-citizen or the non-citizen's family and friends. Is there any situation where that's not the case? This seems like a win-win for immigration attorneys.
It absolutely is. I think that if you're an attorney, there are two key things that you have to do in order for this to be a successful program. The first is the attorneys that we do a lot of volume with integrate us into their process. In other words, whatever their process is for onboarding people, for giving them a quote or a cost estimate, they've trained their staff to present our loan at that point, and it's standardized. And that can look differently for each attorney, but it's integrated. The other one is that we don't do instant decisions, because these are complicated applications where you have multiple sources of income, and we want to make sure that we're making a loan that's going to be a win-win for us and the customer. So it does take a couple of days for us to do the loan. So attorneys, I think, who come in expecting that they're just going to click a button, get the funds, and every single person will be approved, they get frustrated. The attorney who takes a little bit of time to integrate this in their process understands that it'll take a couple of days, and that we approve 60% of applicants, we have great relationships with. So I think that's just the key thing, is just that upfront setup. And I mean, you know, we have a number of attorneys with whom we've done dozens and hundreds of transactions because they've successfully integrated us.
What is the financial and health coaching program?
Yeah, this is an optional program. So I want to be clear, we don't require applicants to do financial coaching in order to get a loan. We certainly encourage people, but it doesn't factor into our underwriting. We have a lot of people that come to us just for financial coaching. There are two flavors of the program. One is where you just get sort of one session of coaching, and the other one is more of a year-long relationship. But either way, one of the cool things about it is how you pay for it. So if you want to just build your credit, maybe get one session, you make 12 monthly payments of $5. If you want the full coaching program, you make 12 payments of $15. Those payments get reported to the credit bureaus as an installment loan. So you build your credit while you're getting access to a little bit of coaching or a lot of coaching. And if you're doing the full coaching program, the $15 a month, not only do we cover the basics of finances, so credit, debt, access to banking, building savings, budgeting, we also talk about health. Things like healthy eating on a budget, access to primary care, and navigating the health system, because there's a very strong link between financial and physical and mental health.
That's awesome. And just talking with you, it's similar to some recent interviews I've done on the podcast with John Kasravi, Laura Kelly, people who seem to be building this whole ecosystem in the world that they like. It seems to be what you're doing. Correct me if I'm wrong. You're building this ecosystem where the historically underrepresented communities can build credit and can do the same things that other individuals in America can do. Like you said, credit's the grease, access to capital is the grease that makes America run.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things that's challenging and exciting about being a nonprofit is that our success is much more nuanced and complicated. I mean, if we were a for-profit, all it comes down to is what your profit margin is. For us, if we were earning a quote profit, which doesn't really exist as a nonprofit, but if we were, but weren't achieving any positive social impact, then the whole thing would be an utter failure. So for us, we flip it. And the first question is, are we achieving our mission? Are our clients significantly better off as a result of having received a product or service from us than they were when they came to us, or than they would be if they had not come to us. And we have really strong evidence to say yes. But to get to that yes, we have to think holistically about what is the suite of things that our clients need. They might need financial and health coaching advice. They certainly need the credit building. They need flexibility in underwriting and in servicing. And they need an organization with staff that understands them, that's going to treat them with dignity and respect, and that can make referrals to other resources if needed.
Before we go, I'm kind of a bit curious about you. We did this interview a bit in reverse. Usually I talk about the interviewee a little bit more. This time we jumped right into the good fund. But I'm curious, you mentioned at the top that your mother's family comes from Ukraine. I hope that if there are any relatives still in that country or friends, that they are safe. That's a bad place to be right now and probably hits home with immigration, with everything that's happening right now with that country.
Fortunately, friends and family that are still in Ukraine, of which they're not a huge number, are so far safe. But as you can imagine, it's an extraordinarily difficult situation. We have family friends that are elderly and don't really want to leave, but they're in Odessa, right on the water, and they can see Russian battleships out in the ocean. So it's a very scary time.
It's a war zone. It's not to undermine some of the other countries that we see as attorneys with asylum claims all the time. But there are certain countries where if you do certain things, maybe you can be relatively safe. I mean, in Ukraine, missiles are flying everywhere. It's a terrifying situation to be in. I hope your family remains safe.
Thank you.
I'm curious, though, in addition to that, why you did get involved in this. This seems like a life mission, an all-encompassing thing. And you talked a bit about it, but why this? Why this?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, certainly being Jewish with family history touching on Holocaust and Gulag and ghetto, I know what happens when people do not fight for justice. And so I've always had a predisposition, recognizing that history, toward wanting to be on the right side of history. I specifically got into activist circles in response to the war in Iraq, believe it or not, back in sort of 2002, my God, two decades ago, when I just became, I was very opposed to the war. And so joined a lot of anti-war groups, and that got me into the whole milieu of anti-war activism. And then, at the time, there was a lot of concern that the war had to do with oil. Whether or not that's the case is to be debated, but that got me interested in the environmental movement as well. So I ultimately decided that I wanted to operate at the intersection of poverty, race, immigration and climate or environmental issues. And so that's why I mentioned, in addition to immigration lending, we also do solar and energy efficiency, because we do know that climate change is a big driver of migration and will be more so in the future. And climate change disproportionately impacts marginalized communities, of which immigrants are certainly a part.
Thank you for sharing all of that. And I'm glad that your journey has led you here, because I think that you're a huge asset for the immigration community and other communities that, quite frankly, I just don't know enough about to speak about it intelligently. But again, 14 years as a nonprofit helping underrepresented, historically excluded communities, it's a great testament to what you're doing. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Before we go, how do attorneys and borrowers get in touch with you, get this started if they would like to use Capital Good Fund services?
Yeah, so I encourage them to reach out directly to me. Hopefully you can put my contact information in the show notes. And then we have a business development team who can onboard attorneys, answer any questions, help them integrate us into the process, and also maintain the relationship over time.
I absolutely will put in the show notes. And I'll also put in a very helpful Q&A that your staff sent my way, because that also helped me and it can answer some of the questions. Maybe you don't get flooded with emails that are in the Q&A, but if so, so
wonderful. That'd be wonderful. Yeah. And I should also say that if you're an attorney that's in a state where we're not currently operating, kind of keep us on your radar. We are, like I said, expanding to a number of states in the coming months and years.
I was going to end with this, but then I actually saw this. The one thing that I also wanted to talk about, you're an accomplished poet, aren't you?
I am. Yeah. In fact, I've written a lot of poetry about immigration. Probably my most known poem was written about when the child separations were happening under zero tolerance. I went to McAllen and was protesting in front of one of the detention centers and wrote a poem about that called The Machinery of the State that got nominated for a pushcart prize in poetry. And I did just finish a manuscript that I'm now in the joyless process of trying to get published. But yes.
Yeah. Wow. Good luck on the publication. I know that's Detention Center. I'm sure a lot of listeners do. If you wouldn't mind sending me your poem, I'd love to put that in the show notes as well. I'm sure a lot of listeners would like to read your award-nominated poem about immigration detention.
I would be happy to share that.
Thank you. Andy, thank you for spending so much time with me this afternoon. Before we go, is there anything else that you'd like to say to tell the listeners, to get off your chest, anything at all?
No, I really appreciate the work that immigration attorneys do. I know that they're not nonprofit entities usually, but they're all typically kindred spirits in doing this primarily for the impact on communities. So I'm very appreciative and really enjoyed this conversation.
I did as well. Andy Posner is the CEO and founder of Capital Good Fund. Andy, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon, and congrats again, and thank you for all the good work you do.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Bye.
So there you have it. I'm Kevin A. Gregg, a partner with the law firm Kurzban, Kurzban, Tetzeli & Pratt, and this has been another episode of Immigration Review. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please share it with a friend and rate and review us. Each review helps new listeners find the show. And of course, subscribe to Immigration Review wherever you get your podcasts. If you like what we do and want to become a patron of the show, please check out our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/immigrationreview or click on the link in the show notes. And if you're interested in an official Immigration Review CLE certificate for 5 credit hours, email me at kgregg@kktplaw.com with your full name and the episode numbers for the 10 shows you've listened to. Also, feel free to email me with questions, comments, or anything at all. And follow the show on Instagram and Facebook at Immigration Review, and send us a tweet at ImReview. That's I-M-M Review. I'll be back next Monday for a brand new discussion. Until then, I'm Kevin A. Gregg, bringing you the Immigration Review.